guys. Good to be back. It's been a long break. Probably too long. I kind of had a stretch where I needed to just kind of unplug from the podcast world for a little bit. I've still been doing my Twitter spaces, but just kind of got to the point where I wanted to figure out what I wanted to do differently with this. And I don't know. It's good to be back. I'm excited to start creating some content again. And I think this episode is a great start. I went to the Litecoin Summit and got to meet Paul, who we're going to interview here. Paul Storz, who created or wrote the BIP 300 and BIP 301. And, you know, he's an interesting character. Like, he just, he has a lot to say. And that's always nice when you're hosting something. It's harder when someone doesn't want to talk. But, no, this is something that's interesting to Litecoiners right now. The foundations mentioned it. Paul's been trying to get this added to Bitcoin for probably 9 years, 8 or 9 years. And he's just not had a lot of luck. And the first thing I want to really do with this is how do we as Litecoiners go about understanding it first? And then maybe in the future we get some pushback as to why somebody might not like it, why somebody thinks it's dangerous. I have kind of an opinion on it that we'll talk about a little bit at the end of the show after Paul leaves. Oh, yes, by the way, you're wondering who Animal is. If you listen to my Twitter spaces, you'll recognize his voice. I got to meet him at the summit, and we clicked really well in person, just like we do on spaces. And so it was great. We hung out for like basically the whole 2 days. If you want to go follow him on Twitter, he's at ANML_Litecoin. I don't know. He didn't intend to be Animal, but he's just become Animal. So that's who he is, if you hear me refer to him. This will be an interesting episode. I hope you learn a lot from it. We tried to take it as slowly as we could because what drive chains could enable is really, in my opinion, pretty amazing. Well, the upside is. And I think my hope is that we get some excitement around it and give it a thorough vetting. And if it's something that seems worthwhile, it'd be exciting to see it happen. So, all right, I don't want to ramble too much. I have I went to the summit. I think I'll do a separate episode about the Litecoin Summit. It was a really great experience. Got to meet a lot of really great people, but we'll talk about that some other time. Enjoy the show. Well, Paul, I know I listened to you on the Peter McCormick episode this last week while I was driving, and you're not a big fan of doing introductions, so I won't bother you with it. I'll do it in some sort of separate intro. But briefly, we have Paul Storz. I learned how to pronounce that at the summit, who
is very good.
Created, BIPs 300 and 301, or wrote them, and is the CEO of Layer 2 Labs, which is that the entirety of what Layer 2 Labs is up to is getting drive chains implemented.
I would say mostly it is about building the L2s. BIPs 300 and 301 are on the L1. So they would be on Litecoin, you know, Bitcoin Core or, you know, Litecoin Core or whatever.
Okay.
But that's only a tiny percent of the actual total process. Most of 99% of the actual software, like calculations, is on the L2. So we build some L2s that we think are good. So if we cloned Ethereum, we cloned Zcash, we have a large block sidechain that is high performance and that high throughput. So,
okay.
So we want to make these L2s. I do some other things with Layer 2 Labs, but that's the main idea is to try to make Bitcoin a success and get it used by 8 billion people. But if Bitcoin is not going to do that, then anyone can just take the L2s and do that instead.
Right.
Because it's all open source software. So,
you're planning on the future where this is somewhere, whether it's Bitcoin or Litecoin.
I do think it's inevitable. I think it actually will be more like BIP 39, like the 12 words, where every chain, there'll be a phase where every single chain has these drive chains, because they give you immediate global planetary scale and they give you immediate Zcash level privacy. So
right,
that's just a reason enough. And then on top of that, they give you everything else that you might want, including the ability to flee the current dev team to a different dev team without needing to fork the project, which is what killed many other things. Live by the fork, die by the fork. So even Litecoin, like when Litecoin first came out, it then splintered into like Feathercoin and like Dustcoin and stuff like that. You saw like funny things like that. And Bitcoin Cash, of course, was right. immediately like split by Bitcoin SV, or even Amaury Sachet wanted like, then it was split again because Amaury Sachet, lead BCH developer, he wanted a dev tax for himself, or he wanted some kind of support. So, and it split again, which is Bitcoin ABC, I think, although.
Yeah, there's like Snoop is going now. And...
Right.
Remember there's Bitcoin Diamond and Bitcoin Gold.
Of course, yes.
Bitcoin Unlimited. There's like a POS one, I think. There's been all sorts of them, but
yeah.
Okay, well, so actually the one of the things we wanted to do right at the beginning, and this might even be like we're going to use you as a glossary a little bit, is getting some clear definitions, because that was one thing I noticed listening to your other interview, is that you've always wanted to call them side chains, but you feel like Liquid has calls them the side chain. That kind of muddies the water a little bit.
It does, yeah.
And so, I guess if
side chain can just mean anything. It can just mean multi-sig address with you and your friends, which is exactly what like Mt. Gox was, and that's exactly what like all these Ethereum L2s that everyone says are fake. This is the stuff that we would make fun of if we were Bitcoiners critiquing an altcoin, but now like that's what Liquid is.
Right.
Well, so, luckily, okay, so people finally come around and they're finally making fun of Liquid. And I think, I don't know. Well, I'll let you ask the questions.
Well, so yeah, that's okay. So is it fair to say that a drive chain is a type of side chain that has a different security? Like it's a different
two-way peg, different bridge or whatever. Yeah, I would say. Yes.
So the permissions are like the administrators of them are different, where sidechain today really could mean anything. It could mean.
Yeah. But the drive chain is administrated by the mining process.
Okay.
So that's a pretty big difference, because that's the same as the difference between eGold and Liberty Reserve, which failed completely, and Bitcoin, which was a huge success. So it's a pretty big difference.
No, I think in my mind, like a drive chain is what, like when I finally understood what you were trying to accomplish, it is what I had envisioned side chains to be like, right? Miner controlled, miner run.
Miners get the money. It's kind of like automatic. As long as they just do nothing, it just works. And there's no person who can just take all the coins unilaterally. You have to just either kill the whole idea for everyone permanently, in which case you lose all the fees and you lose all the any value add to the exchange rate, or you just do nothing and it all continues to work, and now everyone can just turn their Bitcoin, you know, move it from any piece of software to any other piece of software. So that's, I think, a pretty big deal, because it restores competition to the software world. Right now, if you want to use BTC, the coin, you have to run a Bitcoin core node. And then, you know, you can then escape to any number of different Lightning L2s, but Lightning doesn't work. So Lightning is a failed project. So that doesn't really help. The other thing is Lightning is too cozy with L1. We need, my vision is more of different developer groups that all hate each other advancing their own vision. So like in my vision, we'd have like the large blockers and the small blockers. The fact that they hate each other is a good thing. That will motivate them to work hard every day to get users. So the large block people will launch their large block sidechain, and then they know exactly what their plan is, you know, in my fictional world that didn't exist. Instead, they did their own thing, and I think they screwed up completely. And they were, you know, I think we can go into that if you want.
No, but that's become a
the
big
politics.
Hot.
They launched their L2 version. They say, you know what? We have a different vision than Bitcoin Core. We hate Bitcoin Core. We just, if we would like them to all get on a bus and drive it off a cliff. but we can't accomplish that. So we make our own L2, and then we present it to the world, and then we say, here's why you should send your coins from L1 to this L2, and here's why you should only really accept coins on the L2. Here's our L2 wallet. You should be a user of L2. Don't use the L1. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like my vision. Unfortunately, coins have to go. L2 starts with zero coins, but someone, a rich person like Roger Ver, with a single transaction, they could send like 100,000 in theory, 100,000 BTC from L1 to L2. And then over there, they could start onboarding people, and those people would never see L1.
Yeah, so you can spin up wallets. Because it's a totally, yeah. This is something I was trying to grasp last night. Every single side chain or drive chain, is going to have its own note, its own like core software.
The side chains are very similar to altcoins, really. Yeah. Other than that, they have the same underlying coin. That's like really the only thread that connects, and the merge mining piece.
So block times can be different.
Yes. Yeah, it could be written in a different program.
Your address formats will be wildly different.
Address format could be anything, or they could be the same, but that would actually be misleading. So we've actually changed it slightly so that in our software, we have sometimes, because we don't want people getting confused, we put like a little prefix in front of like which chain you're on. And we even relabeled them, you know, instead of calling them all BTC, I did call them BTC and then SC0, SC1, SC2, mm-hmm. SC3. I call them different coins, even though they are all the same coin, because it's just kind of confusing in the user interface to say, oh, give me 5 coins on sidechain 5 in return for 4.9 coins on sidechain 1. It's like you just have to say, okay, I'll give you 4.9 BTC if you give me whatever, SC3. But they are the same thing, and they're one-to-one exchangeable, so no matter what happens.
Well, listen, so before we get into this too much, I just want to go through like what are the differences? What is BIP300 enable? What is BIP301?
301 is just a different type of merged mining. Merged mining was invented by Satoshi. I think the fact that it's possible at all is kind of amazing. Bitcoin is really several different inventions rolled into one. But some of them you can extend slightly. So like the blockchain comes with it. If you add these things, the anyone can spend outputs, you get the soft fork, which is its own unbelievable invention. And then similarly, if you take the block, Satoshi's blockchain, and then you add, you create a new blockchain such that every chain of that second thing contains within it a valid L1. Change. This is maybe confusing. All I'm saying is that merge mining lets you mine two blockchains at once. Yeah. So BIP301 is not, what I want to stress is that BIP301 is not that interesting, because all it does is a different type of merge mining. Merge mining is already possible, and in fact it's unpreventable. So there's no way of preventing. Okay, yes.
So what's different about it? Is it the blind merge mining?
Yes.
So what does that mean? What is that? Because right today, obviously, we were just talking about before you came on.
Traditional,
Dogecoin might merge mines with Litecoin today. Again, it's unpreventable. Right. I think we've talked about this in our spaces a lot. Like 100 chains can choose to do it. It's more about market demand that's going to dictate, are those even worthwhile? And Bell's coin is, I don't know if you know about Bell's chain or Bell's coin, if you've heard a lot about it. It's this other proof of work chain that Billy Marcus from Dogecoin created before he created Dogecoin. And so obviously some Dogecoiners have latched onto this and they've started mining it again, and they're going to change their code to merge mine with Litecoin in the next, I think like in the next month or so. It's happening. Maybe even, it may have already happened, honestly.
Block height, 144,000. And so that's meant to happen by the end of the month, by the end of August.
So today, obviously, I guess I'm assuming today's not blind, meaning these miners know what they're doing. What is it about blind merge mining? How is that different than what we know of today in Litecoin and Dogecoin?
Well, there are two tiny improvements, but in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that big of a deal. But basically, traditional merge mining, the miners must run the second node, so they must run the node of Dogecoin, right, exactly. And then when they mine both blocks at once. No additional hashing is required, but they run the two nodes, they run, mine both blocks, they get a Litecoin block full of Litecoin, and they get the Doge block full of Dogecoin. And so they get paid in Dogecoin. But in blind merge mining, it's simplified slightly so that what happens instead is the miners do not need to run a node of the of Litecoin, excuse me, of Dogecoin. No, I said the wrong thing there. I don't know.
Or whatever the drive chain is,
right?
In this world, they don't have to run that software. Okay.
They don't run that, and then they get paid. They would get paid in Litecoin LTC.
Okay.
So wait, what this is actually
pigouts happen, right?
No, this is unfortunately pretty confusing for people. I would say if I could do it all over, I would never invent blind merge mining, or I would invent it and publish it to the world after BIP300 was like accepted by people, or I would have kept it as a theoretical thing because the two are completely interchangeable. You can have BIP300 without 301 and vice versa, and they are independent. And merge mining, you cannot force people to merge mine a certain way or prevent people from merge mining a certain way. So they're completely different. And I do think it has confused people, but 300 is the deposits and withdrawals, so the peg in, the peg out. 301 is every 10 minutes the merge mining. But there is a sense in which there is an automatic withdrawal, but it's indirect. So what basically happens in 301 is someone who's on the L2 but who has L1 coins, because everyone who's on the L2 also has L1 coins, since all the coins started on L1. So I don't know. Stop me if this gets too confusing. But no, basically,
they're on the L2, but there is an L1 coin
wallet that they have. It's the same. See, what I'm saying is this is possible because it's the same person. So there's a person on L1 and L2 who acts as a kind of bridge, a conduit, and what they do is their software, their node software, which is not mining. They are not doing any hashing. They don't care about proof of work. They don't care about electricity costs. They build L2
for simplicity's sake. For simplicity's sake,
it's really not that important.
The drive chain just. I guess we'll just call it like DC1, right? So
sure,
I've got a DC1 coin, and
that, yeah, LTC and then DC1.
Yeah, so DC1. Only got there because I pegged into
you have like you have 1,000 Litecoin, and you click in the software, you say I move 7 Litecoin over to DC1, and now I have DC1 the coin, 7 of those, or 6.999 or what have
you. So where on the main chain are those represented in a?
Those are locked in this BIP300. This is a BIP300 script part.
Okay,
it's got its own address.
Yeah, basically.
Address pool.
It basically has its own address, although the addresses are. This is like a silly nuance that we probably shouldn't get into, right? Yeah.
But so the biggest difference I see from an economic standpoint is that a merged mine coin like Dogecoin or Bells kind of are inflationary to Litecoin, and the miners, they'll remove some tangible value from Litecoin and Dogecoin if we say we're to add Bells. Whereas if you add a sidechain, a drive chain to Litecoin, it's a deflationary type of
It's exactly the opposite. It's this new feature, but it's the same, 84 million LTC. That's the idea.
You're increasing the value of the Litecoin, of each Litecoin, by sanctioning it to a certain drive chain. Which is appealing, because at some point you can keep merge mining as many coins as you want, and it kind of begs the question, like, where does the value actually lie? If you can just spin up another blockchain.
I always thought altcoins would go all go to zero. I was definitely wrong about that. And I thought it's all open source, so eventually everyone will just do everything with this type of thing. But the big opportunity for Litecoin is that other coins, instead of BTC, have accumulated like this cultural damage. Although I think, just based on what I've observed in my like being 24/7 in this industry for like more than 10 years, I think it must. I'm not very familiar with the Litecoin community, but there must also be people in the Litecoin community who have, because it seems universal that people accumulate, and there's even books about this called like The Innovator's Dilemma and stuff about how there's a certain way of doing things that just accumulates a kind of inertia, like a status quo, and there's high status people who are difficult to dislodge. And so everyone has, no one has made this jump to the sidechain universality. So I think if like Litecoin were to do it, Bitcoin would still just be like, okay, maybe we'll keep thinking about it for like months. So
I was telling Grant yesterday about this, but like I work in IT, right? And we have a couple of rules. You know, you never deploy on Friday. Fridays are like documentation days type of thing. People are very hesitant to test and prod, right? There's no testing and prod. It's a joke. Sometimes there's some teams that do it, but it's kind of like these guys are cowboys, right? Or the product isn't that critical to the company. But so with Bitcoin, let's say that's prod, okay? And now you have Litecoin, which still has a market cap of like 5 billion or something. It used to be a test, like, you know, the test environment, but now it's seen more as its own prod environment. And so people are like hesitant to even like, I wouldn't be surprised, you know, David Burkett, Charlie Lee, like, I don't think they're super keen on adding new features to something that's worth $5 billion. They would not want to put that market cap at risk, right?
I agree with this, but I do think that this is, I think this is a little bit misconceived, because when people say the 5 billion is at risk, I mean, it's like that meme with Theoden and Aragorn, right? Where Theoden's like, I will not risk a war or whatever. And Aragorn's like, well, war is upon you, whether you would risk it or not. And then you just delete war and you put like the other text. So it's kind of like the 5 billion is at risk of any day. New coins could appear and take market share. Not doing anything is, I think, a pretty big risk, because it's a market effect, you know, it's a network effect market. So, but there's another thing, there's another piece to this puzzle, which is I've invented this other thing that I called CUSIF, C-U-S-F, the Core Untouched Soft Fork, which is kind of like a way of doing the soft fork that is very, very easy to just reverse and abandon. There's no change to the software, the Litecoin core software. Instead, you run a second little software daemon that activates the soft fork. And if you just stop running that, then it deactivates. So that was in part also because Bitcoin has the same problem, where in order to do a pull request into Bitcoin core, you have a whole slew of irrationalities that you have to defeat. And even they have like bizarre stuff like style guides and things that they are inconsistently enforced. And you never know if this is just like all a big hazing ritual or the whole thing is fake. So I also have like a way of doing BIP 300 that is much easier to, you know, it's a sort of lower risk, I think. And because it's pretty low risk, because people who haven't run the activator, they don't even realize that anything has happened.
Right.
The risk has got to be pretty low, and there's no perceptible. Well, you know, harm. It's funny,
the risk part of it, like on a technical level, I think is what, it doesn't seem that there's a lot of pushback from the detractors you've had of like that there's something functionally wrong with it, or that'll do anything to impact the L1. And so could you just have it there, and then eventually people just abandon it and nobody cares about it, and right, like no harm, no foul kind of thing. Or maybe a couple wallets get locked up, someone created a side chain and it didn't work as intended. It feels like for the most part the criticism comes down to what is this game theory thing, right? The incentive structure. Yes. And do the miners in my mind, the miners have a vested interest in mining chains that are popular, right? They want if I've deployed all this capital, I'm investing not only my time, I'm buying a lot of times land and buildings and all this, and for me to have an asset that isn't keeping up with the times is a scary thing. I mean, we know how quickly things change, and so the idea that, like, take the whole NFT craze, you know, most part Bitcoin and Litecoin missed out on that because they just weren't capable at the time back in 2021. So the idea that someone could just create Polygon or whatever, or Aave as a side chain, and there's no, you know, there's no commitment to an average Litecoiner to even get involved with it at all. It just feels like that makes a lot of sense because you've got an asset that's already available everywhere and no one has to go find it. You know, we were just talking about Bell's coin. I'm like, where do you even buy Bell's coin? Like, it's just not even available, right? There's just no exchanges with it. It's unproven as far as software. And, you know, so I feel like that end of things makes a ton of sense, giving it these capabilities. And so the question is, what's the potential scary part of it? Because I do feel like if this thing were implemented, it's not like it's not going to be put through its paces. You know, obviously you're going to need people to give the green light in the Litecoin community, which is I think it's a positive and a negative that we have. You know, Charlie is kind of this green, he's got to give the green light for the most part, for something to happen. I don't think it's a definite, but I think it helps a lot, right? So if the community is like, hey, this is cool, we like it, and there's no red flags technically, and he doesn't say, well, hey, I think this is a horrible idea, it's going to ruin miner incentives or something. If he, and I think he's trying to stay out of things as much as possible, then I think you could get this going. But yeah, people just need to reach that comfort level because it's a fairly new idea to us, at least in Litecoin. And I know you're probably pretty exhausted trying to explain this to a bunch of different people.
I've explained it many times. And I do think that...
are you getting frustrated?
I think it's in... Well, there's two ways of looking at it. One way is maybe I'm like a complete crank and I'm totally wrong and I'm completely wasting my time here, which is, you know, that you could look at it that way.
I feel like that a lot sometimes.
Yeah.
not about Paul, about yourself.
Not about Paul, about yeah.
The other way you could look at it is just like, for whatever reason, I have like the right weird combination of like background or good luck or something. And so I'm just like way early on this somehow. And so like, isn't that a blessing? The reason why I'm very, very, very confident that this, I'm on the right track here, is just because I know so much about all the other stuff that people are working on in Bitcoin. I know so much about the Lightning Network, and just like, it's a completely terrible and hopeless idea. It's hopeless in a very different way. But like, I know a lot about many of the other altcoins, you know, that are, you know, in contention. And this is a real problem that people have, where a regular person will show up and they'll say, how do I know which crypto to buy? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They'll say something like that.
Oh yeah.
And so, but with the side chains, you have
right
like an answer
to ask, right?
Like, you have a kind of an answer with the side chain. You say, well, now it doesn't matter because they're all the same. If you buy Bitcoin, you can just transform it into Bittron or whatever, or Monero. Or if you buy Litecoin, you can buy it into, so you can transform it into Lite, you know, Lite, LTC, Ethereum or something. So yeah, I just think who's got something as good as that? It's still in Bitcoin. There's now no plan to scale Bitcoin other than like extremely, I've seen this story many times where, you know, people are not ready to live, to give up on Litecoin. They're dragged kicking and screaming, basically. Lightning. They're still, Lightning. Oh my God, sorry. I knew I was going to do that.
Right.
I told them before we hit the start, I said, I'm going to screw up Lightning and Litecoin, which is a shame because they're pretty different now. Lightning, it wasn't until the criticisms became so clear and so simple and just like ordinals, where it disturbed the fee environment. This is just one. This Litecoin has like 10 things that'll just kill it. But Lightning. One is, oh my God, damn it, I did it again. This is because my brain's trying to load the next, you know, the next sentences.
So I got you.
That's the great answer. Oh my gosh. So when the fees, if you have a channel with someone and you just disagree on what the fee is, first of all, the fee can get too high and it's uncooperative close. But then if you just disagree on what the fee is, it's uncooperative close. And this is basically caused the Lightning channel to fail. One person gets their funds frozen for 2 weeks. The other person pays a huge fee, or maybe they both pay a huge fee, depending on how you've configured it. So when ordinals phenomenon caused some fee spikes, they just caused like the Lightning Network to like just explode, which is already, this is, again, I'm just talking like this is one reason out of 10. The big reason for me that the Lightning Network cannot work is that every single person who joins needs an L1. So it did not have that property I mentioned before where Roger Ver can move a ton of coins over and then onboard people over there. Instead, everyone who joins the Lightning Network, they must themselves purchase L1 coins and then open a channel on L1. So it means you can never onboard many people. The best you can do is hope that
everybody. Yeah, in a self-custodial manner.
Yeah. The other problem with Lightning, this is an almost bigger problem with Lightning, is that people have caused this dichotomy between custodial and non-custodial Lightning. Mm-hmm. The custodial Lightning does not actually use the Lightning Network. Every single word in the Lightning Network white paper is irrelevant to custodial Lightning. And in fact, there's no Bitcoin there either. It's just an app with a number in it. And then maybe they'll give you your Bitcoin back in some other format. But so the fact that people are so committed to this lie, this phrase of custodial Lightning, which is like a fraudulent phrase, that also shows you, though, how bad it is. You know, when people start lying to themselves, you know that the ship is going to go down.
Yeah, well, so let me ask you something, Paul. Maybe this is something that I talked to Grant about earlier, and I heard rumors about it being discussed, but the potential of creating Lightning on MWeb, like on the Litecoin MWeb extension block.
If I were you guys, I would avoid the Lightning Network. I think it is actually not additive. It has many things in Bitcoin have been changed to help support Lightning. So this, we are talking about SegWit, obviously, but also Taproot is partly about the cooperative close being slightly smaller. So there's this weird Taproot and the descriptor wallets. I think all this is actually, this is like, so you're, we were talking about IT before and like deploying to production and things like that. There's the code rot or the software maintenance or just the diffusion of focus because of Lightning, I think, is now going to be the number one most likely way that Bitcoin will fail and be replaced by something else like Lightning, like fucking Litecoin. God damn it.
Yeah. The wrong thing. It's funny because the interesting part, like you just mentioned, is like, I think that there are developers. Again, I'm not a developer at all, but I have to imagine there's people that, like you, at some point you go, this just doesn't work. Like, how many times are we going to try this and fail? And you're
the
in
the user experience is never going to be there. Yeah, it's like you can't have transactions fail. Like, if you imagine you use Visa and use MasterCard, but every one out of every 100 times you use MasterCard, it just doesn't work. It like fails and it's awkward, and you have to, the waiter or waitress comes over and says, should we run it again? And then you say yes. No one will be, 0%, the regular public will always use Visa in that case. The reliability has to be so high. The fees all have to be lower. For the payment rail,
rebalancing your lightning channels, routing, all that stuff, it's work and technical stuff. And You've got to apply these rules, these constraints that your outbound peers or inbound peers impose on you. You know, it's to do it properly. I think you need something like 2 million satoshis, right, to run a proper Lightning node. Plus someone working full time managing the thing, right?
Yeah, the liquidity management is what would be one of the 10 reasons. I'm not pulling this 10 number out of nowhere. I did write a tweet at one point where I had listed a bunch.
We're not here to kill. We've already killed the Lightning Network, right?
And I just think it's just, you have to be online to receive funds. You have to sign. So you need your private key. You have to sign in order to receive funds. So I would just not. I wouldn't put Lightning on.
Let's not get too caught up on Lightning.
I wouldn't put it on anything.
I do have a couple other questions, because when we were going through definitions, so what's the difference between a drive chain and, like, we have extension blocks, Mimblewimble extension block on Litecoin? How are those similar? Like, I'm
They're
just trying
very
to,
similar.
well, like, how can Litecoiners take that and say, okay, I understand how MWEB works? Are they basically the same concept because you're
They are
just.
very, very similar. The extension block was invented first by, I think, Lau or maybe Adam Back in December 2014 as a possible resolution to the block size war. Adam Back said something like, well, we can have, if some people want 8 megabytes, some people want 1 megabyte. This is how, what a genius Adam Back was before he let those other people at Blockstream corrupt his mind, unfortunately, is my interpretation of kind of what happened. But he said, old users can just run the 1 megabyte software, new users can upgrade, and they'll have 1 megabyte L1, plus there'll be an 8 megabyte second block, and we'll just put the hash of that in the L1 block, and then as long as the miners do that, then you can always go one way. So you can move coins from L1 to L2, but you cannot move them back. But Adam Back was just kind of saying, this was just a mailing list idea. It wasn't like a giant paper or anything. He was just like, well, that would kind of solve the problem, right? Because then Roger Ver and large blockers can just go over to this extension block, live over there, and then so what Drive Chain it adds to that is you can go forwards and back, but when you go back, you go back in a way that has filtered out. Okay, let me try to explain this the right way, because with Drive Chain, the priority is ignoring what is going on in the block. So does that make any sense? The priority is we want, because we want to maximize people's freedom when they create these L2s. So we want to say anyone could create a new L2 blockchain whenever they want. We don't care. We're not going to look at it. So what DriveChain does is it says, instead of being us being responsible for knowing what's happening in there's just this really slow 3 month like compression thing that just compresses all of the activity into this one hash. So I'm gonna, I know that I'm not happy with how that sounded, so I'm gonna try one more time, which is everything
Well,
in
no,
block,
let me
everything.
relate it a little
Okay,
bit
yes.
to MWEB, because from my understanding, again, I'm a noob on a lot of this stuff, but you know what David Burkett had said is there's what you're trying to do when that block comes back in, because every 2.5 minutes there's a block that goes out, there's a peg out block and a peg in block. And that peg in block that comes back is just trying to summarize what happened in the last 2.5 minutes and give a final state of the addresses that exist in MWEB or th that are coming out. So it's just kind of to prove that what happened in MWEB actually happened and that these are the new balances that are accurate. Is that what you'd understand? You're muted if you're trying
Yes, 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 yes.
to.
No, I thought you were going to say a little bit more after that.
Well,
I
it's because
think, okay.
drive chain, like that's what you're trying to do is get that where when that info comes back from the drive chain, that it's accurate as to the state of what's gone on, but it doesn't care how it happened. It's just saying I knew
Yes.
we have an accurate
These
count of it.
things, yeah, the reason as to why you would think it's accurate is different. So I got one thing that I have to throw in here, which I think will maybe clarify it, which is this is the so-called data availability problem that you may have heard of. But it's very important to understand this because it's actually at the heart of all many different matters, including block size war and everything else. So basically, when you run a full node, so like the what is Satoshi's blockchain? It's a set of blocks, it's a set of all this data, and we have agreed to be responsible for it. So this is what the block size war was about, because it was like everything in the blockchain has to be served back. Okay, I promise this is going to pay off, though. I'm just trying to make it the best
Okay,
explanation
is there any?
possible. So like, have you seen this? Someone has like a little sticker that was going around recently that said like, there is no cloud, it's just someone else's computer.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Yeah. So like when some people say something is on the blockchain, they think like, oh, that means I'll always be able to download it. But if you download it, then someone else has got to be uploading it, right?
No, absolutely.
Is this making
AWS,
some sense though?
Google.
You mean the miners are the ones doing the uploading?
No, that's not what I mean. I'm trying to say is what the block size war was about, which is what is the size of our commitment to upload?
Mm-hmm.
Because for everything that someone out there is going to be able to download, someone else has to upload.
Okay. So running that node, that there is an accurate is an accurate representation of where the blockchain is today. Somebody's got to be maintaining that in order for me to connect to them.
Yes.
Get that information. Okay.
So I'm going to go over this a couple times because this is really, really important. And I think anyone who understands this will have a much better understanding of Bitcoin than even most of the senior Bitcoin Core developers who have a very confused understanding of it. Honestly.
Listen to that. On the Litecoin Underground podcast, you're going to be better than a Bitcoin developer.
definitely the people who want ZK rollups and stuff, I think, don't understand this. And maybe, hopefully, that would be dare I say, a homework problem. Someone could take out a blank sheet of paper and try to figure out maybe why I would say that. But I'm going to reemphasize that what is the blockchain? You know, and it's a bunch of 1 megabyte blocks in the case of BTC until SegWit came out, in which case they could be 4 megabytes. But it's a bunch of 1 megabyte blocks. Everyone must be able to download and verify the whole chain history, right? So you can't validate what happened in block, 403 unless you download it from somewhere. And I promise this is going to get tied back to this whole extension block drive chain thing. I think if you understand this, it will make a lot of sense. So this is what I call, you could call this data availability or you could call it data responsibility. I was thinking about maybe writing an article about this. So get it here first or whatever. But it's we are responsible for the X amount of data. We collectively, everyone who runs nodes. Now that means that you can always download this because someone is always uploading it. But this does create this exact tension that was the block size war. You see where the tension comes from now, because if the blocks are larger, there's more uploading that everyone has to do. The full nodes are more expensive. But if the blocks are smaller, then it's the reverse. The full nodes are easier to run. The full nodes are easier to hide the physical location behind Tor. The full nodes are cheaper, the full nodes are easier, everyone's responsible for less uploading, but we just have less block space to use, so the network cannot process the same number of transactions. So this is what the block size war is about. And now here's the tie-in, which is Adam Back's extension blocks were considered basically a one-way mandatory object. So the miners, there would be mandatory, a permanent upgrade. But with drive chain, they are supposed to be optional. And so the miners, everyone can run, mine things, deposit, withdraw, with letting the sidechain die out. So you are not, with the drive chain, the people who are on L1, they are not responsible for the contents of the drive chain. But with the extension block, they are. So that's the difference. But it's a very small difference, to be honest with you. I think it's not that big. But you can see how the attack would be that you just keep adding a million extension blocks and then it becomes like Bitcoin SV or something. And then it's the idea of what a full Litecoin full node. Because what BIP300 does, I don't know if if this is going too far into the weeds, but BIP300 says we will not look at anything that happened inside the extension block. The extension block is itself responsible for creating this extremely small summary, like 40 bytes, of what happened and inserting it in Coinbase transaction on L1. So BIP300 is only looking at things that happen on L1 to do the deposits and withdrawals. It does not look into that. And that is why you can ignore what happens on the L2. And that the reason why that is important is because now anyone can do any L2 that they want. Because you've safely walled it off, because you've built like a wall between you and your neighbor that's like 10,000 feet high and it's made out of, it's like 15 feet of concrete. Now they can play, everyone can play their music. Exactly. Now,
yeah. I was wondering if you can apply this to an example, Paul. Sure. Are you familiar with the Torrens title system, system used to, I guess, distribute titles, or is a database. Say, for example, like every country has this, right? Say, for example, well, in the US, you have a drive chain that just keeps track, keeps a record of the title for everyone's property. Or say, let's use a smaller country. I don't want to get political or whatever, but just like a, you know, Eastern European country that might be invaded, right? And they have their own Torrens title system. They've got, everyone's got their property listed up there, and it's being managed by a drive chain inside this country. And this country becomes invaded, and suddenly the invaders, you know, shut down the miners that are in that country, or they take them over and shut down the nodes that are running those drive chains. I guess one thing that sets drive chains apart is that anyone can run a node. So a Canadian miner can run a drive chain node for the American title system, right? So you can keep it decentralized in that sense. But yeah, I wonder if you could speak to like some of the strengths in that scenario, because I think that's kind of one of the things that sets it apart, right? Is being able to have be able to run nodes for drive chains that really, you know, you don't have a real stake in yourself. Say you could do it from like an altruistic perspective, keeping the drive chains for each title system for every country, right? Just to keep a record.
I have mentioned that in the context of scaling, it is not actually that hard. If you, you know, I have this post where I split the world into like 13 or 14 regions, and they each have their own like large block sidechain that like deletes history that's older than 6 months.
Or like MWeb at
$2,000 a year. Anyone?
Sorry? You cut out for a second there. You cut out for a second there. You said it basically prunes as much data past 6 months or something. Yeah. And go on.
Yes. And so basically, what I mentioned in that post is that if like someone wants to shut down, let's say, you know, for example, the Russian government wants to shut down Ukrainian transaction processing. Anyone who's running the Ukraine full node, they don't have to be in Ukraine. They could be in like the United States, or they could be like, you know, working at the Pentagon, or they could just be in Hong Kong, or they could be in Japan. So the people running the full node don't necessarily need to be the same people who are using the service. And these people don't necessarily need to be miners or whatever. You can just have you program the computer to divide the labor, and there's really no it's really no possibility of people defrauding each other, although there's a slight, but it's very, very, it's so small that it has to be negligible. And so that is something that I have written about. I don't know if that's what you're referring to specifically. I think that would also be true of the extension block thing. I do want to mention that, like, if, in my opinion, which, you know, may be wrong or whatever, but when I zoom out, I think that actually Adam Back and I think it was, I don't remember who it was, someone else right before him had proposed it, this extension block idea in December 2014. I think really they were just small blockers who didn't want to lose. They knew that via this technique, you could continue to expand what data Bitcoiners were responsible for knowing forever. And they knew that this was this data responsibility thing. They didn't want to be responsible for the data. They knew that the extension blocks, it kind of chopped it into pieces, but in practice, the other pieces were really mandatory, whereas with drive chain, they are not. But in my view, that doesn't really make much of a difference, because you can. So I think that I'm not sure if this is making any sense or clarifying anything for anyone, but I do think that that was like most of the idea there, which is that we should just chop the data into different bins. Nonetheless, drive chain is an improvement over on the one key issue that is really, this is the issue.
Storing the information.
Drive chain. Yeah, you want it to be able to die off if the chain becomes too heavy and it is not popular with users. So there's no, people aren't paying transaction fees. You want it to
Let me ask about the death of the sidechain, because like that to me is probably like everybody is excited if they get to move their money and go get all these new capabilities. But the real question is, how do I get it back if it doesn't work out? So what is the mechanism? And this is one of the things I know I want you to take slowly and speak in simple terms, because I know there's big numbers and long time frames. But I'm on the Zcash Litecoin sidechain. I'm wanting to move my coins back. What's the mechanism? I just basically in my wallet, I just make a request, and then there's a time frame and a lockup. How does that work?
There are two tracks, and my opinion is that almost all regular people will use a different track, basically, which is like the fast track, fast and slow. So, however, this fast track only works if there is a slow track. So it kind of works like this. The fast track is
trading, right?
Yeah, the fast track is just you find someone who has L1 coins, you do the swap, and you immediately get out. But you have to pay a fee, yeah. Because it passes the buck to, like, how's that person getting them out?
Yeah, yep, yeah, I understand.
You know? Yeah. Right, exactly.
It's like the lightning. You're paying for speed. Though, because you're sacrificing some of your ideals for speed, right? That's what you do with lightning. It's a trade-off. I don't want to get back into lightning.
Well, this is a specialization thing. Yeah, so this is like the most – someone will be a specialist in – it's like you have two towns and they're connected by like a long three-month tunnel or something. And you don't have – only one person actually has to go through the tunnel every 3 months. So they're like the scapegoat, the biblical scapegoat. They can be like going through the tunnel on behalf of everyone. They take everyone's coins through. So they swap the coin. Everyone can swap the coins instantly. The only question is, how's that person getting out? So on the L2, you say, I want to withdraw these coins. Mm-hmm. In the realistic example, you can imagine as if there's a train leaving L2 and going to L1, you know, that it takes 3 months, the voyage. And only one train can move forward at a time. So in this context, probably your coins are waiting at the train station, because a train is already en route. So you have to wait for the next one to get on.
And they only, a train only leaves every 3 months.
Right.
Oh, geez.
Potentially be even longer. Yeah.
That's if all the miners are in consensus, right?
Yeah, if they all agree, if they're all going as fast as possible, it's 3 months. If you only have 51%, then it will take about 6 months. And if you just miss that train, then you will
be a year.
You will have to wait 6 months for the next train to appear at the platform, and then you have to ride it 6 months to the destination. Ooh. But here's why that doesn't matter, because you can swap with people on L1. So it's not going to – it's just going to be time value of money. The reason why it's so slow is because this enhances the security. As I was saying before, we ignore what's going on in the L2. But we can't ignore completely, because then the funds will not be secure. So by having this really low frequency – there's basically this hash. And if the hash doesn't match, then the withdrawal should fail. But if it does match, then that means absolutely 100% of everything being done in the sidechain was done perfectly. So it's like a very, very sensitive trigger. It says either everything was done perfectly or somewhere someone did something wrong, and we should just not allow the train to move.
How are
forward.
The miners, what's the process they go through to validate the accuracy?
It's very easy. If they wish, this... okay, well, it's kind of interesting, because I'd like to explain all the little different nuances of it. But basically, what can happen is the best way for them to do it is to sync a full node themselves. But again, keep in mind, they only have to actually do this like once every 6 months, and then they can delete it if they want. So, but there's many layers to this cake here. This is like an interesting little thing, because in reality, it's going to be so difficult to lie, since anyone who syncs the full node will get the right answer, and there's only one right answer, and the answer is only 32 bytes long, 64 mm-hmm. characters. It's just very, very difficult to actually pull off the lie. So none of this will ever be necessary in practice. But
okay, another so the 6 months is intended that were, it's kind of like when you go to Coinbase and they want 6 confirmations. This is asking for so many confirmations that it's extremely immutable. That's
exactly right. And in fact, the more difficult it is to get, it's kind of like if you're a prisoner is leaving a prison and they have to buzz you through all these different gates, you know, it's intentionally to slow it down. So they buzz you through, you know what I mean? Like in Law and Order or whatever, and like go through, they got to shut the other door and then they knock on the window and they buzz, next gate. This is like 6 months worth of gates. Now you see, it's a deterrent. The more difficult it is to attack the system, the more likely it is that no one even tries in the first place. So the idea is just overwhelming force on this. This is the
you try to run a scam and you wait a year to find out it didn't work.
Exactly. Yeah. Or you try to you go to the Apple store and you grab like an iPad off the shelf, but then you turn to run away and you immediately get slowed down like -100. You're like very slow. And now they have plenty of time to call the police. The police can come like 2 weeks from now and arrest you. You know, you've only made it to like halfway to the door. So the idea is this part will be so reliable that actually it will always work. And since this part will always work, there will always be people willing to swap the coins instantly. And so then they'll charge 0.5% or whatever it is, you know, whatever the market bearing percent is. Okay. The idea is it will just be anyone, because about something like 20 or 30,000 people can fit on the train. So it passively aggregates. I'm not sure if this part will make sense. Like I can say, I'm getting on the train and I'm taking my 14 coins. And then you can say, oh, I've got 3 coins on the L2. And I say, okay, you know what? Listen, I've got 2.9. I'll take those 3 coins off your hands and I'll put them on my train, you know, in my luggage.
Yeah, but, reduce the amount that you have to write to the L1, right?
Exactly.
The transaction space, yeah.
So on L2, a lot could be happening. Like he can be swapping to me, but all I'm doing is I'm incrementing my one little number from 14 to 17 to 21. I'm giving you L1 coin. You get the L1, my L1 coins in a completely different wallet today. But you pay a fee, and now I'm just still only taking up one seat on the train, but the number is going up. It's going up 14, 21, 32, 100, whatever. So I can be one guy, just like one Roger Ver could seed the sidechain. One single guy can do all the withdrawals with one of the 20,000 seats. So the 20,000 seats is also like total overkill, because those seats are, by the way, allocated by the L1 fee they pay. So there's no possibility of someone taking up all 20,000 seats. Someone just pays a slightly higher L1 fee, and then they get bumped, and everyone else gets kicked off the train. So
let's say a chain becomes, you know, it doesn't work well. It's whatever reason, the software wasn't written properly. I've got my coins there, and the train station's closing in a way. There's just not a lot of people who are even running the nodes to bother. Do the miners have any obligation to wait until that is emptied? Can they do like a final closure and just say, we're gonna shut it down and everyone's coins will be returned to their proper owner?
In practice, I would hope that they would do something like that. Of course, there's no guarantee. Oh, oops, sorry. I was trying to make myself a little lunch here and I dropped something. Okay. Mm-hmm. What I would hope they would do would be something like, we're not collecting any fees from this chain. No one cares about this chain. So withdraw them because the next train is going to be the last train or maybe not, but like, we don't care. Like there's a certain point where you just say, I declare that I'm not going to care about this anymore. And now if people don't care, then no one knows if the withdrawal is being processed the right way or the wrong way. They just, now the miners can just loot the side chain, take all the coins. It would be the fear.
Well, the miners probably won't be either. Like, there would be a danger though if someone who created this side chain made an error, either intentionally or unintentionally, to lock some coins up in an address that they don't have access to. Like, there's a possibility for people to lose funds in a improperly managed side chain. Is what I'm saying.
They would deposit the funds on L1 to a BIP300 script. So that'd be my fault if it didn't work. But for all the sidechains, no matter how badly. But the sidechain could be very badly programmed in that no one knows. Like over there, it's very hard to tell. Like maybe there's an inflation bug on the sidechain. And now there's like a trillion coins over there. And now over there, someone does a bunch of withdrawal. Like there's only 7,000 coins on L1 have been deposited to the sidechain. But however, over there, there's now like 50,000 coins. Whoever tries to withdraw 7,000 coins first is going to trigger the train to leave. And now, like, now there's chaos over there.
Back on the L2, yeah.
Yeah, but you see, this doesn't really affect L1. And L1 will eventually just pay out the 7,000 coins. And then everyone will just say, well, that was an experiment that didn't work. And this is a very good thing because just like, you know, when you go out and you go out to a restaurant, why is the food good and why is the food cheap? Because the restaurant knows that if they aren't competitive, they will go out of business. And so actually the threat of collapse is partly what keeps people in line. This is a very different paradigm.
There's no vested interest by anybody creating these side chains, is there? Like, I don't make any money by building a great side chain or drive.
Yes, this is. I think this is another area where it's either genius or crank. But I think most people, so like Mark Andreessen from A16Z, he has this motto about monopolies. He says monopolies. The motto of every monopoly is, "We don't care because we don't have to." And I think this is the real thing about innovation is people actually desire it for its own sake. And many of the great projects is tried to be on Bitcoin first. And I have made a slight list of this. If you saw I don't know if you saw the misinformation page on drivechain.info, but I have in one of the questions, I have a long list with citations of like Vitalik trying to create Ethereum on Bitcoin for many months, but being unable to. The Roger Ver obviously trying to get large blocks on Bitcoin, only creating Bitcoin Cash as like a kind of like multi-year last resort. People from Namecoin, Sia, they wanted to do a Bitcoin project, but they could not. So my point of view is actually that the true innovation is more likely to be of this kind, where people want to do it. They don't care about actually remuneration. They don't care about money, making money from the idea. They just want the idea to be an improvement. And actually, a lot of the other innovation is lower on the sort of food chain, and it is not it is like of an unsavory kind where it's just like pumping and dumping meme coins. So my view is that these chains that will be created will be ones where people actually want to solve a problem for the end user, and the miners will only activate or care about these merge mining these chains if they think it will increase their transaction fees or the exchange rate of the coin. So that's my thought on this. I think it's very, very difficult to, like have a, what can we call it? Like, it's very difficult to have a situation where someone is paid to innovate. I don't think it works that way. Okay. I think the reverse is the case with like Bitcoin Core has this monopoly, and now the monopolies just don't care. Bitcoin Core doesn't actually care about doing real innovation, you know, they just want maintain.
Okay, I got a couple of questions actually, you know, before Animal, because these kind of sprung to me recently. So, in your previous, when you were saying that it takes so long, people will just use, they'll just swap coins instead of bothering to off board and wait the year. You then become pretty reliant on exchanges, like you're. Not that we're not today, but like your hope is that there would be some kind of marketplace that we could swap these things fairly easily. Do you kind of envision they would become just like any other asset is today, and they would appear on your Coinbases, or maybe even would there be a side chain that becomes a DeFi side chain that basically allows these to work?
Yes, that's exactly what I think. So I think Coinbase, et cetera, would list them, but I also think it's very easy to program the side, because every side chain in the drive chain world, every L2 is fully aware of what happens on L1. So every L2 knows exactly which transactions have happened on L1. So you can make an L2 where the L2 transaction only triggers if an L1 transaction is triggered. that's already possible with this, the HTLCs, but you can streamline it even more. You can streamline it even more on with a drive chain that does this. But even if you couldn't do that, you could just do the HTLCs. You do a hash time lock contract and you have two people with the same hash. So the A pays B, the L2 coin, if only the hash is revealed, and B pays A, the L1 coin. If only the hash is revealed, it's the same hash. Either it's revealed or it's not. If it's not revealed, the thing is canceled after a certain time. If it is revealed, then both transactions go through. So I think that we would not be reliant on exchanges, but I do think that many people would use exchanges nonetheless. And the market price, it would not be like going all over the place. The market price would be going between like 9.99 to like 0.998 or 0.997 or something. You know, it would just be basically the, and in particular, as the train approaches, as it leaves L2 and approaches L1, the fee, the implicit fee, should start to decrease because everyone will think, oh, now the new train is going to be here soon. So I'm, and then once that train leaves the station, it should just skyrocket back up to a higher fee because now it's like, oh, I got to wait a year instead of.
Everybody wants to get on the train. Yeah.
Yeah. You miss the train, then the fee goes
I'm kind of, because one of the things I think is a fair critique of yours of Lightning is that it ultimately, it takes those fees away from miners completely. Where this, this also would do a lot to reduce pressure on the blockchain. And it would keep fees on the main chain very, very low. And almost to the point that maybe people wouldn't even really use the main chain at all. And the vast majority of transactions are going to happen on, like, let's say there's a BCH side chain, it's 32 megabyte blocks, and they're all doing every transaction for a tenth of a penny. Even all those transactions wouldn't really accumulate to be even worth a hand, you know, where Bitcoin is today, right? If the main chain's down to one sat per V byte, that depresses everything dramatically. Do you feel like that even though some of the fees are coming back, it still reduces that overall fee income because it basically takes all that pressure off the main chain?
No, I do not. I think people often confuse the fee rate and the total fee revenue. So like the fee rate would be like if you're selling watermelons or something, you sell one watermelon for 10 cents, but you sell 40 million watermelons. So now that's $4 million in sales versus where you say, okay, we're only going to sell 25 watermelons today, but we're going to sell them for $100 each. Now that's a lot less than $4 million in revenue. So one is the height of the rectangle and the other is the area of the rectangle. And so I agree that if this idea is successful, since there's unlimited L2 block space, all of the fee rates will be low. Although L1 would probably still be much higher than the L2, but not, it won't be that much. You know, the L1 would maybe be $5 per transaction, and the L2s would be like 10 cents a transaction or something like that on average, maybe some less, some more. So that's the future that I envision is like the L2s have like 10 cents-ish per transaction, and the L1s have like $3, $4, $5 per transaction. And in my view, this maximizes the fee revenue given to the miners. So the miners, because the L2, you can just look at the quantity. There are many, many, like the total number of transactions on Earth is an enormous number. It's we have 8 billion people making multiple transactions a day, 365 days a year. So it's like on the order of, you know, 6-10 trillion transactions per year. I'm not saying I'll get all those immediately, but what I am saying is you take 10 cents of that, that is hundreds of billions of dollars per year. So like $700 billion per year. And that grows, the number of transactions that people have been doing has been growing over time. Now, again, I'm not saying we immediately get 100% penetration into that, but what I am saying is if anything works at all, it will depress the L1 fee rate. So let's just say you have Bitcoin Core, the fees go up because of ordinals, everyone switches to custodial Lightning, the fees go back down. Yeah. See, the L1 fees. So you see, this is what you see time and time again with Bitcoin Core, which is the fees go up in these little episodic bursts. They go up in these big run-ups, you know, but then they always go back down. You can always find a period of time, like whenever the fees are high, it's always temporary. And then it just goes back to being 10 cents or whatever a transaction. So my view is that this is a long run, the so-called long run price elasticity of demand. This is the term in economics for like, you know, my view is that in the long run, this is just going to be low no matter what, because there will always be some substitute. You can always either defect out to a custodial, or you can just say, I'm not using Bitcoin anymore because the fees are too high. I'm just going to go back to Visa or whatever. So
yeah, there was a thread recently. I don't know if you were a part of it, or this guy, you know, this fantasy where they're just like, well, in the future, when Bitcoin fees are $1,000, and I'm like, who the fuck is going to pay $1,000 to move their money 24 hours a day, 5,000 transactions every 10 minutes are going to pay $1,000? Like, are you out of your mind? Like, that just isn't, there's no fee. There's no world where that even comes close to that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I've tried to imagine it. I have like a funny little story in my head. Like, it's like when you throw the quinceañera for your child, or you buy them their first car, you know, it's like,
yeah,
we've saved up. Now it's time for you to have your first Lightning channel, you know, and it's like buying a child, and every time the L1 blockchain is used around the world, that's like everyone turning 15 or 16 years old, and the parents pay the $1,000 fee and they open. That's the world that you have to live in. You can see how that world is going to get crushed by a world where you just have Litecoin down the street has, you know, $5 L1 fees and 10 cent unlimited L2 transaction processing.
Yeah, but it's
right?
A shit coin. You wouldn't pay. Why would you save yourself $999.99 to use
it? See, but now you see the opportunity because you see how irrational BTC has become. And that's the opening, you know, that's the opening for Litecoin. So who would have thought that would be, I would never have thought that it would become so irrational, but it really has. So you see, this is the scenario I lay out is like $5-ish L1 fees. This is the equilibrium long run. And then unlimited like L2, which is like probably be like 10 cents-ish or whatever. And if you do that, the amount of fees collected by miners would skyrocket enormously. I mean, enormously from what it
will. Yeah.
I think more so. You make it up on volume.
You're enabling so many new capabilities. I think that's at the end of it all, that's the name of the game, right? Is to bring this idea of this distributed ledger, final settlement, and expanding it to not just monetary transactions, to whatever imagination people can come up with, whatever developers come up with. And I actually think this works alongside altcoins. I do think altcoins are just going to exist. There's too much incentive for people to try new things and if you want to call it pump and dumps and token and shit tokens, but there's actually a lot of good chains that have functions that you go, you know what, that would be really useful if it were widely available to everybody. So I think that's the tough part, is getting the incentive for developers to create these things and to bring users over without the speculative thing, right? That they're going to build actual utility that people want to use, and they want to remove the token. Like, removing the token is a benefit.
Hey, this is Grant, just following up on the end of this episode. I had to end up splitting these into a couple different episodes because of YouTube. It will not allow me to upload anything over 2 hours and have it be an audio podcast on YouTube. So it probably makes more sense, and it's going to be more digestible for everyone just to get this over the course of two segments. And actually, there's a third one I'm adding you'll see up there as well. That's kind of a follow-up conversation we had with Paul on Twitter Spaces. So, yeah. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it. Oh, and I forgot to mention, how could I forget? Cake Wallet, the sponsor of our show, the greatest mobile wallet you can have. You can buy, sell, and trade Litecoin, Bitcoin, Monero, Ethereum, Bcash, Nano, Polygon, all the assets that are listed in those protocols as well. You can hold them as a custodial, your self-custody wallet. You can trade in between them. You can buy gift cards. They're going to be adding privacy special, I'm sorry, sorry, private payments. What are they called? Silent payments on Bitcoin is coming soon. Mimblewimble is coming soon to Litecoin as well. So they're always on the cutting edge. And as I always say, man, the user interface, user experience is always top notch. They're great customer service if you ever have an issue or a question. So go check them out. And yeah, keep stacking and have a good week. Bye.